Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I like to think that this is the best place to get a review of the weekend's football action, especially when it says so on my script. And this is where we debate the big issues as well. And to do this in the studio today is pretty awesome because we have joining us Matt Hughes. I believe it's the first time this season. I also believe you're not wearing your cycling gear today, right?
That's correct.
Running
or running gear. Well, whatever it is, it's sleek and spandexy.
You're not wearing your running gear either.
I'm not. I am exactly. The voice you heard, of course, was the always humorous James Scowcroft. And wearing a hat to the back, a reverse baseball cap for some French reason, it's Julien Laurens. Coming up, we'll be talking some Chelsea and Spurs, and we'll be talking some Matthew Syed with Matthew Syed. But first, we're heading to Old Trafford. James, it's four home draws in a row for United. Ander Herrera came out saying that, the keeper was man of the match, opposing keeper man of the match, we're unlucky, blah, blah, blah. I actually have a teeny tiny bit of sympathy for your mate Mourinho, and that you probably should have between six and eight more points in the table, no?
What's that based on?
Based on the fact that Mourinho says so and Ander Herrera agrees. No, based on the fact that against Burnley, against Stoke, against Arsenal, this last game here against West Ham, these are all winnable games where it so happened that you either had an opposing goalkeeper doing really well or some level of bad luck or whatever, and that the performances certainly are better than they were at the start of the season, or indeed under Van Gaal.
But it's United's worst start for 30 years. Bar Arsenal, you'd look at the teams and you think, well, if they were top six teams, fair enough, but they're teams that you would put down as a banker home win.
I don't know. Have the performances been better? Am I grasping at straws here? Am I being Rui Feria?
United can't score goals. That's their problem. They can't kill teams off.
That's exactly the point. I'm just looking through this yesterday starting lineup and thinking, where are the goals going to come from?
If only Rashford
had played. I think they've created more opportunities than their opponents, but they're Old Trafford. Could they? They blooming well should. So I'm not that sympathetic. And I still think, well, they're playing slightly better football. The team is unbalanced. He hasn't worked out where Pogba should be playing, really. And for Mourinho's sort of USP has always been, hi me, day one, we go, hit the ground running. And this has not happened at United. And that's the first time, I think, in his entire career he's been unable to kind of flip that switch, which I think is interesting.
Julien, are you going to join into this Mourinho pylon? Because I would argue, actually, that he knows where he wants to play Pogba and he knows how he wants to use Carrick. And against the big teams, Carrick plays. And against the crummy teams that he thinks are crummy.
I agree with you in the way that they're playing better.
I don't agree with the
unlucky thing. What's unlucky? What, they wanted the keeper to not stop the goals? What's unlucky? Unlucky is if you hit the bar five times where the keeper were beaten each time, and then you say, we were unlucky. If the other team's keeper is having a great game, what you're saying, like, oh, we were unlucky because he saved everything. That's not luck.
Are they playing better than they were
at
the start of the season?
Are they
playing
better than they were under Van Gaal?
Are they playing better than they were under Van Gaal?
They're playing better, but they're getting worse results. So
performances have a predictive quality to them. The table does not.
But the irony of this conversation is that the manager of Manchester United
that
only cares about results and not
that is the delicious irony here, which is that somebody who kept going on and on and on about how much he's won and all his titles and my favorite stat, which gets repeated often by our friend Duncan Castles, is that it's something like, I think he said he won three league titles in five full seasons. Not counting the two where he got sacked. And then he says, like, every time that he was able to play without interference from above, he won the league title. The Pogba incident? Yellow card?
No.
Yes.
Borderline, probably, yeah.
You know how much I love him. He is a great drop of the shoulder. and then nobody's nowhere near him. It's not even he jumps to avoid the tackle. There's no tackle. It's like Noble's leg is far from him.
Why does Noble do that, by the way?
No, because Noble thinks that he can get the ball.
But you see just, how far he's away. You see how far away the ball is. The ball's on Pogba's other foot. Right?
It's just too quick for Noble, I think. But there's no reason for Pogba to let himself go on the floor like that. It could be a bit unbalanced. I give you that, Scoey, because I know what you're going to say. It's too much, though. And the ball, the touch is a bit heavy as well after dropped off the shoulder. His ball is a bit heavy. He can't get the ball back.
Scoey, set him straight.
He's dropped his shoulder with a brilliant piece of skill. And it's impossible to think, oh, he's going to come out. He sees him coming out, you know, and you play against players that you think he's going to tackle me here. He's got that close, he's going to tackle. You know who you're playing against. Mark Noble is that kind of player that you think, well, if he can get close to me, he'll tackle me. So it's a great bit of skill to go past him. And you just automatically think, right, it's going to come here and I'm going to have to jump it. You can't stand still and think, well, I'll let him hit me. It's just a natural thing to do. And it's just nowhere booking. I think anyone that's played the game would not book him in that situation.
Hughes, you don't seem really fussed by whether this was a yellow or not. I do want to point out, though, that for there to be simulation, don't you have to kind of, as a referee, isn't the implication that the player is trying to con you? I'm not suggesting that. I don't think this is a clear-cut situation where it's not either it's a foul or simulation. It could also be.
It's been punished for a great bit of skill.
You don't believe you would try to take a dive in that area of the pitch?
No. But
do you believe he's a diving cheat?
No, he's not.
And French, too?
He's not. Well, no, he can't be French and a cheat, but. It's what else then? There's no explanation, and I understand what Scoey says, and I've played football as well, not as well as Scoey, but and I can see why. Okay, you're a bit fit, but I think again, nobody's far from Pogba. It's not even close.
Hughesy, that decision upset Jose Mourinho, who was sent to the stands for the second time this season. I don't know if you have more information than I do. What I could see just from the pictures is he got angry. He kicked a water bottle really hard. The fourth official mumbled something to him. And then Moss came over and sent him off. Now, obviously, if he said something horrendous to the fourth official, then he should go. We don't know if he said that or not. And this being England, we may never find out. But some people suggest that when he does stuff like this, it is partly for the crowd and the cameras and whatever else.
Well, if that's the case, he's not as smart as he thinks he is he? Because he's going to get himself sent off, as he did again. Start of last season, FA introduced new rules governing managerial conduct, and in that specifically referenced kicking water bottles, etc. So these guys, they know the rules, and they should behave properly. I know it's kind of funny, but it doesn't look great, does it? If every manager at a kid's football team is going around kicking water bottles on the side of a pitch very quickly, things get out of hand. So I think he's got no right to complain.
And it's for yellow. It's for something so little as well. You know, if it was the 90th minute, and I don't know, there was an offside or a penalty or something, and that would deny you possibly 3 points. But what's the point to do it for that?
Scully, have you ever been playing on the pitch and seen your manager sent off or sent to the stands?
Yes.
Who was it?
Neil Warnock.
I can't.
I'm surprised.
Every week.
And what he did, he was very clever, Neil Warnock. And he invented a way of having a go at the referee. And he would say to me, Scully, tell the referee, and the referee would be, right, come over close and everything. Tell the referee, he doesn't know what he's doing, he's got that decision wrong. And so what he would do is the referee would hear it, but he was actually having a go at me about it. So do you understand it? And he was a master of doing it. And at half time, he'd go down the tunnel, and at the end, he would absolutely lambast the referee. But he would do it towards somebody else, and it was fantastic. It wasn't fantastic how he did it, but he was...
When he did get sent off, I'm assuming if you did that, somebody got wise to it. How does it affect you on the pitch? Are you just like, oh, look, Gaffer's gone, or like...
You just get on with it, don't you?
I'm trying to think
of the game he did, because I can remember him waving both arms, and I can remember him walking up to the director's box as well, and I think, oh, he's obviously said something there.
Can I reiterate my call to the PGMO or the Premier League or whoever it is? When you send these people off, don't let them go in the stands. Don't let them put them back in the dressing room with a chaperone, no phone, and just freaking make them sit there.
Like a player. Why would it be different for a manager?
Obviously, from this year, we had the year. Remember, what was the year years ago when like Wenger got sent off and he got lost in the stadium?
It was like that.
I find it very hard to understand that they've obviously, Wenger was a prime example, and with all how strict the Premier League is, that there isn't every club that says if a manager gets sent off, you have to go through this procedure. Have you got a designated area where he sits? It's just nobody knows what's going on.
You saw it yesterday.
You send him to the dressing room with a chaperone.
So, yeah. Because you saw yesterday when Mourinho was sent off, those two stewards from Old Trafford, so you assume United fans probably, having to like come and say, oh, Jose, this is this way. And like, they've probably never spoken to him before, so that was quite cool. But also is to tell him like, sorry, mate, it's this way, come with us, which is really weird.
Let's talk West Ham. It looked all doom and gloom. Because I guess going in before today, I think none of the strikers had scored a goal. But then all of a sudden, Sacco scores straight away. And Dimitri Payet, I thought, played better, certainly the last two games, especially this one. They'll be just fine, right? I mean,
I think they will. I think credit to them for keeping Bilic, whether they kept him because no one else was available or they asked a few managers that didn't want to come. But for Payet, it's the first time in his career, and at his age as well, it's not easy, that he had a summer tournament. With an international one with France, a proper one where, as well, he played every single game. He looked shattered at the end of the Euros. And I think he was always going to take him a bit of time at the start of the season to get back to full fitness, to get back to his best level, because his fitness is not his biggest quality, as we all know. And I think he was also a bit dependent on the rest of the team, I think more than we thought, maybe. And last year he worked so well because the team was working so well. And this season he had to do more things on his own, like that incredible goal he scored, for example, or that Rabona assist for Antonio and those kind of things. And they can only be okay if he's good. And a good player like yesterday, like Sunday at Old Trafford, will help a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think West Ham will be okay. They're sort of victims of overachieving last year, in a way. I mean, obviously Leicester did that.
And far, injury,
far
right?
More than anyone, but... You know, the teams that did well last year, with the exception of Southampton, have kind of struggled to back it up. And it's a tough league, and the bigger teams, with the exception of United, have got better. So
I'm sorry. What kind of like lamezoid excuse is it? I'm looking from the other side, right? I'm sorry. I knew I was supposed to not be controversial here or contrarian. But Hughesy, help me here, right? Let's pretend
I'll
your name
try.
Is David,
yep.
Right? And you're one of the owners of this club.
Yeah.
You have this club. You spent money on it. You made this whole arrangement with the new stadium, right? In the summer, you're like, hey, Slaven, who should we get? Let's hang on to all our young stars, which I believe by and large they did. And let's give the good guys new contracts, Lanzini, Payet. Like, these guys are good. We've got Noble. Crespo gets hurt. He's only out for 3 months, but that's okay. Look, just to be sure, we're going to go and we'll bring in this Masuaku fellow who then gets hurt as well, but that's another issue, right? And then we're going to go and spend a whole boatload of money on Andre Ayew. And you want another skillful attacking midfielder type? Okay, here's Feghouli. I don't understand. They spent on the money. They strengthened the squad. They've had injuries. Why isn't it legitimate to assume that, you know, since managers need time and everything, and Mourinho and his three transfer windows, why isn't it legitimate to assume that West Ham should be better? And they look at some of the teams on the table who are ahead of them.
Yeah, but you can't assume anything, and they're ahead of them. But
no, but sorry, not assume, but expect, right? I mean, sorry, it's like, Bilic, this is why we put our faith in you. And you get paid a lot of money to manage a big club in a big city with a big stadium and a big budget.
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of mitigating factors that are beyond Bilic's control, not least the shambles of the stadium. And if you're David Cole or David Sullivan, I think Slaven Bilic...
Or both of them at once.
Or both of them at once. Then Slaven Bilic is the least of your problems. They need to sort out the stadium first.
And you still have James Collins.
But he only plays because Winston Reid was suspended.
Ultimately, you have to stay in the Premier League.
Which I think they will.
They will.
You guys make the Premier League seem like such an absolute drag, where there's like four or five teams that are vying for the title. United, an ongoing soap opera. Teams like Southampton, where we said Everton, where we feign an interest. Who can they break into the top six? And then the rest is just a whole like pile of dross, like trying to avoid the drop.
You got it.
Just end the podcast.
I think I like the Premier League more than you people do, honestly. Final thought on United and West Ham. My friend and colleague, Duncan Castles, who's obviously writes for the Sunday Times and is very close to the Mourinho camp, he made the point that it's going to take another 2 to 3 transfer windows to get United, that the players are of the quality that they can take United to the level that they're at.
When it's not working through windows, what is he going to say? Ah, oh, but it's not my fault. Come on.
Spent 200 million in the summer, more than anyone else.
And he had 6 months to prepare the transfer
window.
But
he says you can't bring in 4 or 5 players of quality in a transfer
window.
Well,
in August, he said, I only want, what was the phrase he used? I like specialists. So I pick my 4 players I want. Just excuses. It's rubbish.
Do you think if he had another 3 transfer windows and he spent about 200 million in each one, Scully, that United would be competitive?
Well, they've had, since Ferguson left now, they must have had a dozen transfer windows.
They've spent more money.
I know, but they've only had one under Mourinho.
They've spent more money in that period than they have in the entire history of the club. They've spent fortunes.
Can you guys not include
Moyes? So
what,
three windows is what? January 2018, they're going to be competitive then?
He already had the one this past summer. Yeah, so, you know, hey. All right, so nobody's buying this.
Mourinho doesn't know his best team, and Mourinho needs to get the best out of the players he's got, and he's not doing sound things like that, is he? They can't score goals.
Okay, let's
the
be
best,
clear,
the
by
best
the
finisher
let's be clear
is not even
fair
in
to
squad.
Mourinho. Mourinho hasn't actually said this. A journalist who is very close to...
Well, you've just said he is, and it's come from him, and blah, blah, blah.
No, it's a journalist who's very close to Mourinho. Would you say that's fair? A journalist who's often put Mourinho's views across and has fought Mourinho's corner?
He certainly fights his corner, yeah.
Exactly. A shout out to our sponsors, FanDuel. That's fanduel.co.uk. It's one day, it's just daily fantasy sports, basically. As regular listeners will know, that I thought fantasy sports was something that was slightly lame and slightly made for kids and people who didn't know better. But this is actually a bit different because they use a whole algorithm to tell you how many points your guys get. The other thing that's pretty cool about it, unlike normal fantasy games, you don't have to commit for the whole season. You're in and out one or two days, and you can win money off it. And there's the 22-player contest, for example, which I've entered teams in. It's £4 an entry, and you can win up to 75 quid. So stuff like this I find is actually fun. And the way it works, obviously, people who've played fantasy will know, you get £100 million you can spend on your squad. You got to be clever about it because you have to consider who's playing that week and whatnot, and who's more likely to score points for you. Anyway, you can go to fanduel.co.uk, and if you enter our promo code, which is the game, not hard to remember, you're going to be given free credit of up to £10 if you don't win cash in your first contest. So it's a pretty good deal. Now, this is only available in the United Kingdom. You have to be over 18. Please play responsibly. And, of course, terms and conditions apply. Moving on to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea and Tottenham. It's now 7 wins in a row, despite going a goal down. We'll get to Chelsea in a minute. I want to start with Tottenham, Julian, because I know you enjoy talking about them so much.
Yeah.
After that absolute shambles... That complete nonsense in midweek. I thought, like, aha, Poch has jumped the shark. This is where it all falls apart. And instead, they go and take a lead. And for much of the first half, they maybe even looked better.
They were better for the first
half. Despite all their absentees as well.
Yeah, but I think it helps when you've got Vertonghen at the back, which was not the case on Tuesday at Monaco in the Champions League, for example.
So he was being rested?
Yeah, which is a bit weird. I think in a game you had to win to stay in the competition. And I think the plan worked. The plan worked for 45 minutes. It's a shame it didn't work for 90 minutes because, again, it was one of those games where if you could run as much as the Chelsea players, this Tottenham team could, without a doubt, you know, being on top of the game. That's where they were for 45 minutes. When they stopped running, that's where the troubles arrive in the second half. And you see the Victor Moses goal. I'm sorry, but if I was Mauricio Pochettino, I would be so angry. I mean, angry doesn't even come close of a player allowed to run 70 yards with no one even getting close to him from your team. You know, at the end of the day, it was 11 against 11 in that second half as well. And how come Victor Moses is allowed to run all that time on his own from one box to the other to score? It's outrageous.
Because
it's
it is.
Son.
You can. I would have thought it was Son too.
Yeah, of
but
course.
You see Wimmer get sucked inside.
But Wimmer has to go inside because I think, you know, Costa is crossing. You've got people in the box. But Son, and you see it on the footage as well, Son and even Eriksen are jogging. They're jogging back when Moses have been sprinting from his box to the Spurs box. And at that level, I'm sorry, you can do that with your mate on a Sunday morning and you don't want to trail back, you don't trail back, you'll be lazy. But not at that level, I'm sorry. I thought that was so bad.
Really weird guy.
You were there.
I still not quite understood what happened because for 40 minutes... Tottenham were outstanding. Chelsea were very poor. And then as soon as Chelsea got the second goal, Spurs didn't respond. The issue is if they mentally they've gone after a poor run, one win in 10, or physically they just worked so hard in that first half hour, pressing so high up the pitch that they were just shattered. I mean, they do that. They have injuries and their squad is decimated.
Yeah, but he rested people in midweek too, right?
Yeah.
And the ones he did play kind of stood around most of the game because they were so terrible.
Yeah, but come on, they've had Kane's just come back, Lamella's been out, Alderweireld, who's the best defender, has been missed. That back four, Dier, Vertonghen, Wimmer is not a Premier League back four. So they've gone, actually, from, they've gone from the best defence in the league.
Interesting
to
point you make this about here about the back four, okay? Because people get angry at me when I say this, but
all right, I think Alderweireld is very good, and he wasn't there. I think Rose has been really, really good the last 18 months.
Great.
I think Kyle Walker runs very fast and puts in a lot of effort. I don't know that he's as clever as Rose is or as gifted. But these other dudes, I mean, seriously. I mean, when do we get off the Vertonghen tip? What? So like the guy can hit a pass? The guy takes some hours to turn. Dyer. There's a reason why you move Dyer into midfield in the first place.
No way is he a centre half.
This other guy, Wimmer?
And also, I don't understand. Why can't Trippier play left back? And no, please don't tell me he's not left-footed. Is that the reason?
I thought Vertonghen was tied left back, I have to say.
And Wimmer in the middle. Yeah, but are you just moving like people? Yeah, it's like moving turns around, is it?
I don't know, but when you have you only have those players anyway, so you have to do something, and you clearly thought that was the best option.
I was disappointed. I mean, every year I feel like this is the year that, you know, Poch. I really thought last year they should have won it, if I'm gonna give him a pass. And I just see this, and they just fall apart. It's just so fragile. And then another point on this, Moussa Sissoko. Let me read you this quote. I'm about to ask him, where is Moussa Sissoko? This is a man they paid £30 million for. Anybody know what players in the history of the universe Tottenham have spent more money on than Moussa Sissoko?
None.
Okay. Where is Moussa Sissoko? And it's like, where's Waldo? Where's Moussa? Right? He was at home, said Pochettino. He wasn't here. Football is not about money. It's about you being better and that you show on the training ground that you're better than another teammate and that you deserve to be involved or not. Listen, I'm all for it. If you want to play, you know, Poch, you're going to want to play sage old coach towards Moussa Sissoko and make a point about entitlement and teach us a life lesson. It's absolutely great. I'm all in favor of that. But what I don't understand is Pochettino signed him. There's nowhere to hide now. You can't go and you can't blame your director of football. You can't blame Franco Baldini. You can't blame David Pleat. You can't even blame Levy on this one, can you? It's not like Levy woke up on deadline day and says, oh my God, I haven't spent enough money. And of course, I love spending money, so I better go and buy Moussa Sissoko. No, presumably Pochettino and his crew went and they learned everything there was to know about this guy. And they went to the club and they said, what is the explanation?
It's even worse than that. Remember, he was on his way to Everton.
Exactly.
He was on the M1 going to Liverpool, and then they hijacked the move and he did a U-turn on, you know, whatever services that was, and then came back down.
Have you got the attitude footage of that?
But has Moussa Sissoko done something? Is there a deeper story here?
No. The attitude has always been a problem with Moussa Sissoko. I think the talent has always been there. The attitude was always a problem, and we saw that with Newcastle when they were in trouble the year they were relegated. He couldn't care less.
I thought he started well at Spurs. I thought
him moving to a big club, a real big club with, you know, title ambition and playing the Champions League, this would sort him out in terms of attitude, that he will put a shift in our training every day, would be there. And clearly he isn't. And I think he was disappointed. I think that this could have happened much earlier in the season as well, by the way. Because since that game against Spurs, things have been really difficult from what I've heard.
If I'm Levy, I am absolutely furious. Not out of the result, but over the fact that we just spent this enormous amount of money and this huge contractual commitment to a player who, frankly, I'm not even sure that we need, because when everybody's fit, well, who are you going to draw? I mean, you're going to tell me Sissoko is better than who?
No, but he's versatile. So
I don't care.
He can come in. He can play wide.
He can play centrally.
Okay, sorry.
Lamella's been injured for 3 months. Yeah. And
he brings something different than Lamella.
Okay, when everybody's fit, these people are better than Sissoko.
Yeah, but you're telling me you need 11 players?
No, that's fine. I don't need to make my club record signing some dude who I plan on putting on the bench.
I think the club record thing is irrelevant, really. We live in an inflationary market. The price.
You think that's irrelevant to Levy?
No. But it's whether he's good or not. It's not how much he costs. I agree with Pochettino on that.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
He should care.
You should care because you got rid of all the bean counters, right? You're in charge now. You're surrounded by all these people. Yes, sir, may I have another? Yes, sir, you're so clever. Yes, you have all the power over everything, right? David Pleat's in his little cubbyhole. Everybody else is gone, right?
Yeah. You'll be angry at Poch for signing him. Not for getting the best out of him, or you would be furious at Sissoko.
First of all, I would be furious. I would be furious if I own a club, I will not allow transfers on deadline day, except in very specific situations, because this is just stupid. Sissoko was there all summer. He wanted to leave all summer.
They chased him for most of the summer.
Yeah, and they chased him very well if they still ended up having to spend £30 million on this doofus,
because
right?
They didn't want to pay that much, and to the point where they said, okay, now...
But then eventually they did. Yeah, okay. So you made me spend this money. You take responsibility for him.
Yeah,
you can't go and blame this on everybody.
No, right? Right.
You know, you need to own this. And you say, I don't care how much it costs. Well, you should care. Right, yeah, because I let you take this club's money and spend it. Anyway, I am a big fan of Pochettino. I think he's great.
Me too.
I think on this point, though, he really screwed up in a big way. Chelsea, 7 wins in a row. Are you a believer, Scoey?
Well, his results speak for themselves, don't they? And Victor Moses running 70 yards to score Chelsea's second goal as a former teammate of mine, Victor. And you would never, ever, ever say become a right
wing back. Is that a Palace?
That was at Palace.
Was he faster than you?
Not quite, no.
Hoping he was faster.
He was the most
he was only
12. Naturally
Even if he was
gifted,
hoping he was faster.
Naturally gifted young players I've come across. Very, very laid back. Lovely kid. And fair play to Conte. He's got him playing right wing back. And he's having a season. I think he's having the best season of his career. I think that's fair to say. It's a great run, isn't it? A fantastic run. And I just think these clubs, Liverpool are the same. If you look at that, and we go back to the point with Chelsea, if you're out of Europe, it is actually an advantage, isn't it?
Massive.
Whether if you want to gloss it up or not, it's a massive advantage.
By the way, just as an aside, there's a great debate on Twitter last night, which ended up involving a whole bunch of people, including, I think, Piers Morgan and Martin Ziegler and Gary Neville and
what was Gary Neville doing?
Rory K. Smith. Gary's original point is he goes and he tweets out something which I think is wrong, so basically blaming the Europa League for United's poor results, which I don't think makes any sense because I think the performances have been good. There's some kind of tabloid newspaper then goes and, not the Sun, I hasten to add, the other one, goes and takes his tweet and turns it into a story and, you know, with a headline like, Gary Neville run jumps to the defense of, and it's literally like an hour after he tweeted it. How is this a news story? And then Piers Morgan obviously waits.
If a famous person says something, it's a story. I don't think it's a particularly interesting story or a good story, but that's just running a website. It's just endless and they'll put anything up.
So 7 wins in a row. A lot of the success has been ascribed to this 3-4-3, but surely it's not just that. Do you think, and Conte came out and said, and nobody believed me, that he originally wanted to play 4-2-4, that's his best formation. Not going to happen, Husey, but do you think they're going to continue with this 3-4-3? Or are there some obvious tweaks that they can make or should be making?
It'd be really interesting to see what they do at Man City on Saturday. I think they'll play the same system. He could bring in Willian for Pedro, I suppose, make it slightly more solid. But it just seems to perfectly suit the players he's got, whether by accident or design. 2 wing-backs who aren't the best. Well, Alonso is more defensive than Moses, so that balances itself pretty well. And it's brought the best out of Luiz. And it basically means when they've got the ball, they can just flood bodies forward. And Costa drags the opponents out of position, and the wingers bomb forward. And there's just, even when they're not playing well, they're gonna create chances. So I think he'll stick with it. I think the one player who hasn't really had the credit he deserves is Azpilicueta, playing as a third centre back, having been a right back, a left back. Now it's his third position, and he, without him, the system doesn't work because he provides so much cover for Moses to bomb forward. I think he's been outstanding.
Do you not think this is a prime example? And we talked about Mourinho this morning, and other coaches, and we'll go on to talk about more of a manager getting the best out of the squad that he's got in individuals.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also we can't ignore the fact that he has had a time on the training pitch to put it into practice. He has, as we said earlier, he has 7 days between every game. They work very hard.
I agree with that, but what I would say about that argument is you only really know in games if it works. It's hard to sort of say, oh, this works in training. You know, there's an argument that maybe Manchester United don't train as much as what Chelsea, but Mourinho's had more time to seize players in the real match day.
Yeah, and he's taken the players with him as well. They've all bought into it.
Yeah,
we were talking to Gary Cahill the other week, and he said after the Arsenal game, I wouldn't have had any complaints if I'd been dropped. I was so bad, but Conte stuck with him, and as a result, partly as a result, his performances have improved.
Didn't he look a bit like a 4-2-4 in the second half with Hazard playing a bit more centrally, almost like level with Costa, and then you had Pedro Moses on the right, Alonso on the left. He felt like, I'm not sure, has he given up completely on the 4-2-4, or could that 3-4-3 at some point, he just tweaks it a little bit and he goes to a 4-2-4, which no one expects really, and again you can have an extra man up front and he offers you different options. And
4-2-4 with Alonso as his left winger?
No, as a left back.
And he put Moses forward and move Aspi over,
because Pedro moved a lot, and Pedro's goal comes from being on the left-hand side, although that was the end of the first half. But has he given up completely on that 4-2-4?
No, I don't think he gives up on anything.
Because I think it's very interesting how you can move from a 3-4-3 to the 4-2-4 quite easily, actually, in that team, because Alonso can very easily play as a left-back, and then Azpilicueta as a right-back, and suddenly you have Matic and Conte, and then you just tweaks a bit the Hazard, Costa, Pedro, and Moses.
I don't think he's fully comfortable. The 4-2-4 requires certain very specific movements, and you're right, he might be working towards that, and I know he's tried it in training, but 4-2-4 is just pretty alien, because especially the way he played it and the way he played it in his time in Siena, this isn't like a 4-4-2 where the wingers bomb on. This is like a real 4-2-4, which is very difficult for people to wrap their heads around if they haven't had it already, so I think it might be down the road. Are they favourites for the title now?
I think Man City probably still just about favourites. I think the top three will be the top three, unless Liverpool implode. I don't see Arsenal being good enough again. Sorry, Jules.
I agree with you.
Yeah, the lack of other distractions is huge for Chelsea. January comes along, there's those awful League Cup semi-finals, FA Cup. Chelsea just play four games, win them all.
They can strengthen the squad as well in January if they want to.
They need another midfield player.
Yeah.
If they lost Kante or Matic, or they lost Costa, they'd have a big problem, because he's not having Oscar or Fabregas.
Mikel's back.
And he's not having Mikel either.
Yeah. Which is weird. What Hazard said to you after the game was that you would think that maybe at half time Conte would be a bit unhappy. And that, you know, he's the type of coming back in the dressing room at half time and just like ripping them apart if he's not happy. And Hazard said, you know, he was quite quiet and just said, we have to use Moses and Alonso a bit more. But you would expect him to be a bit more like, come on, you know. I think he's amazing. I really do.
I think he gets angry when he feels under siege. But
he got angry after Liverpool at home after the game. I don't know about half time, but I know after the game he gave it to them.
And you wouldn't want him to be in the same room as him angry. Clearly,
I don't know
if you've been Gab, but
I wouldn't want
to be in the same room with Gab and Conte. That would be horrendous.
Imagine the argument between Gab and Conte. Everywhere. That'd be amazing.
Enough Conte.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Moving on in our debate section, a story that's kind of dominated the headlines in the past week. It all began with Daniel Taylor of The Guardian and his piece on young footballers being abused. And we've had a number, I think, of important pieces on this from Matt Dickinson to Henry Winter. Matthew Syed, though, joins us on the phone now, and he wrote his own column on the subject. But Matthew, before we get into sort of your argument in the column, I just want to talk about what is a reasonable sort of standard of duty of care and oversight to expect from the sporting authorities. I mean, is it comparable to what we would expect from our schools or our childcare?
Yeah, I think it is comparable, because if one has an institution that children are involved with that has a lower standard and a different set of protocols and procedures, then by logical inference, and that is the place that will be targeted by highly manipulative and often very sophisticated paedophiles. So it is important, wherever children are involved, that there are high standards. And these do impose, I mean, it's worth saying, they do impose very rightly quite severe obligations on any organizations that do have interaction with children. I set up and co-founded and now sit as a trustee on a very large, or at least a middle-sized children's charity. We have 53 full-time programs, and it is a big part of our bandwidth and a big part of our cost to make sure that we do look after children, not just child protection, but also safeguarding. And obviously, what this story is showing is that in the last century, where these standards were a lot lower, it did give massive opportunities for paedophiles to exploit young footballers.
James, you're a contemporary of some of these people who've come out and have talked about being abused. So, and you were a youth footballer, obviously, in that era. And also, you have another perspective because you work with youth coaches today. When you think back to your time when you were roughly that age and the culture around the club, especially in the relationship between coaches and players, what differences do you know?
Well, there's a stark difference. And I think I agree with a lot of what Matthew said this morning. I go back to this was the 80s when I was a kid and I was coming through an academy, a centre of excellence. And there were some excellent coaches and youth development officers who you would strike up a really special relationship with, and they almost became part of your family. And they were just good, solid people. But now you can't do that. You cannot. I can remember a coach often giving me a lift home or you know, and they cared, you know. And if you're going to develop young footballers or into another sport, you do have to have a close relationship. I don't think you can be long distance or distance with them. And that was the case. Now, you know, obviously the system's been abused and it's very hard to sort of, you know, stop it before it starts. But what I would say now, the modern day, it is so strict now. You cannot, for example, as a coach, which I am at the moment, I could not give someone a lift home or drop them off at a train station. It's so regulated by the FA. I'm not quite sure what the FA can do much more at the moment. Everybody's CRB checked. I just think if anything went on in today's society, it would last for 2 minutes before somebody was ousted, and it would they would go down the channels.
Can I ask a stupid question about this? And maybe this was explained to you in your training. If you were a sexual predator, what does that have to do with giving somebody a lift to the train station? I mean, because in a sense,
what happens, Gab, is you have to protect yourself, because if a child says something, it's you, and you're in an awful situation. Right. So this is, you know, what we do is...
Which is much to protect the coach.
It's so far now that anything you say to a child, even if it's related on his game performances, has to be witnessed by somebody else. It's almost... And I agree with a lot of it, but what's gone out of the window now is that relationship that I had with a small select of people who really helped me, you know, develop as a footballer and as a person. You can't have a relationship like that anymore, so it's getting the balance right, really. But I think Matthew's right. You know, we can't let all coaches be tainted by this scandal. There are some... Just hope everybody puts it into perspective. And if anybody has, you know, hopefully they'll be ousted and named and shamed.
Well, one of the arguments there that, you know, you mentioned Krug, and Matthew, you touch upon this as well. After the fact, when these things come out, you're left with this uneasy situation of, did the institution, not were they complicit, I mean, nobody, I would hope, would suggest that, but did they know at the time when they identify a sexual predator, they may oust him, but then do they have an obligation to go further? And obviously there was the case with the FA documentary in 1997, I think it was. Graham Kelly, who was in charge at the time, coming out and saying, well, gee, I didn't know that, you know, none of this information ever passed my desk. Inside, it kind of feels like sort of the cover-ups afterwards are the bit that's most unsettling. I mean, you chalk it down to a different culture at the time?
To an extent, I do. And I don't mean that in any way to remove accountability and responsibility from the clubs and from the governing body. But I was quite struck by something that James Ducker said yesterday, where he said the media coverage actually wasn't that significant at the time the paedophile was convicted. It just didn't seem to be that big a story. Whereas now, of course, it's created huge scrutiny. And I think there has been a real sea change in our recognition of this deep, sensitive and complex problem. And just picking up on something else that was said, this is reflected in much more rigorous procedures and protocols that protect both the coaches and the children. And I think my fear, and what I was trying to reflect in the column, is that parents will say, oh, goodness me, we must take our children out of their sports clubs. You know, we can't be sure of their safety.
That's what you were wanting. That's what you were considering doing, right?
So yeah, we watched the Victoria Derbyshire show on catch up because I'd heard so much about it. Me and my wife, and I just turned to her and I said, "You know what? Let's take Evie and Teddy out of their tennis lessons. I mean, we can't be 100% sure." And then it was, and she was like, "Yeah, you know what? Because it's very emotional. It's very stark, and fear is a very natural emotion for parents." But of course, the climate has changed. It's not to say that it's 100% secure because you can never be sure of that. But I just wanted to reflect on the fact that the procedures are a lot tighter now. And there's an opposite risk that if you keep your children at home and wrap them up in cotton wool and never allow them to go out and explore and adventure into the world, there's a terrible risk that they won't develop the resilience and the character and the great virtues that are one of the consequences of playing sport under the auspices of a really inspirational coach. You just do need that closeness with mentors and these wonderful people. I mean, two coaches I mentioned in the column completely changed my life. I spent Wednesday afternoon with them last week, and it just brought memories back of this extraordinary, deep friendship that I had with them and how much they had changed my drive, my motivation, and, you know, built that resilience, which is such an important part of life.
Well, thank you, Matthew. We'll see how the story develops. Also related to youth development, but on a different, very different situation. There was an exclusive by one of us in the room last week related to youth development in Manchester City. Anybody volunteer?
Oh, right, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that would be you, Matt Hughes. A lot of people aren't clear on this at all. When we praise, like, oh, so-and-so's youth academy, oh, they're so good, blah, blah, blah. You know, a lot of times, if we just judge it by what players graduate from the academy to the first team, a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, better football clubs have better scouts and sometimes more money, and they go and they take the best kids from other teams. It's been going on since time immemorial. But you have a story that Manchester City are under attack by their jealous neighbours up north.
Well, that's one way of putting it. That's probably the Man City version. Yeah, I've been told by lots of people in football over the last few weeks that Man City, I mean, there's always been a bit of a kind of law of the jungle out there, but the perception on the ground is that Man City are sort of going above and beyond in terms of aggressively scouting opponents, taking players from other Category 1 academies. And in this instance, Liverpool particularly lost a 15-year-old goalkeeper last summer to Man City, a kid called Louis Moulden, and that transfer is yet to be signed off by the Premier League. And they're kind of going through various procedures to work out if City behaved, and that was the one transfer I was able to write about, but apparently there are lots of other grievances.
I wanted to just on the regulations on that point. You make the point that there's some fancy private school up there where City players are sent to, and it's very expensive and whatnot.
All Cat ones have private schools.
Okay, but what I found it interesting. But you know what? Not all private schools are created equal. Some of them are just a way to extract money from gullible parents, and others are very good private schools. But anyway, the point I was making was one of the things they're accused of doing is that they pay the school fees for siblings, or indeed they'll continue paying school fees after the kid has been dropped by the team and is no longer part of the team if they don't think he's good enough.
Yeah, they pay the fees up to 18, even if they leave at 12. They're denied paying siblings
fees. Excuse me. I just look at it from a parent perspective. Why is this illegal? Isn't this kind of desirable?
That's not illegal. The suggestion is that that's from other clubs. I'm host to, not the Premier League. The suggestion is that that's an inducement.
Inducement what? We're going
to
give your children...
Man City.
We're going to give your children an education.
Yeah, instead of paying the parents, you pay the school fees.
But surely education is something desirable.
Become
so incredibly anti-intellect. No, I get that point. But you're not giving them money. You're giving them an education.
Otherwise they couldn't afford that education.
But surely it's desirable for people who couldn't otherwise afford it to be educated.
Yeah. Is it not an inducement? That is the argument.
Yeah, but it's why? It's a good inducement. I don't understand. What's stopping every other club from doing this?
You're not supposed to offer any inducement, financial or otherwise, to recruit
but this is a
child.
Stupid one, because this is an inducement that's desirable for society. That's just me. I'm sure there's valid reasons. Right, time now for some quick hits. Though for those who are unfamiliar with it, the idea is I will ask a question. You have 20 seconds to answer. After 20 seconds, you will hear this sound, and then I will let you speak for another 5 seconds, if I'm so generously inclined, after which you will hear this sound effect, And then after that, I will comment, and I will always get the last word. And it's going to annoy some people on Twitter. But hey, that's life. Arsenal bounce back from European disappointment with a 3-1 win over Bournemouth. But Eddie Howe points out that his team were denied two penalties and, in fact, played rather well and should have had more. Julian, you're, of course, entirely impartial here. Is Eddie Howe correct and Arsenal were actually a bit fortunate? Or is Eddie Howe just a ginger, insane guy living on the South Coast?
Played really well. They probably, you know, on another day had a draw. I'm not so sure about the two penalties. Even the one they got, I was not sure it was a pen. They probably could have had the handball from Montreal. But I thought they played well. And like I said, every season since they got up, they will stay up. No problem about that. And by the way, in case you didn't know it, Alexis Sanchez is a proper machine. The guy is incredible.
Incredible how? Because he scored a goal in 90.
He's a machine. The guy, when that quote from Wenger at the end, when you think he's dead, he's still alive. It's exactly that. He plays on one leg. He's played 500 games this year and he still runs his like he did. It's just, I really do. Whether you like him or not, whether you're an Arsenal fan or not, I think the guy is incredible.
I was just surprised that he kept playing him. But
I know, but I don't think he doesn't have the choice. I think he can't tell Alexis, you're not playing. I promise you. I think they have that kind of relationship where Alexis says, I want to play, he plays.
Manchester City overcome Burnley 2-1 as Pep leaves out Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva and Ilkay Gundogan. Hughie, given that City don't play again till next Saturday, is this a case of Pep being too clever again and it nearly costing him?
Possibly, but they got the result, I guess, which is all that matters. And I think he's conscious that he's got Christmas, New Year coming up, lots of games, so he does need to rest players. I think what's most interesting is what's happened to Yaya Touré in the last few weeks, and he's really been reintegrated to the squad, which is another victory for Pep.
It's definitely a victory for Pep. Some might say that maybe if Yaya had been there all season, they might have even more points and be further along. But
no, that's his fault.
All right, just pointing that out. Middlesbrough grab a point at Leicester City as the beast Alvaro Negredo bags two, and his teammate Adam Clayton says it would be hard even for Lionel Messi to score tons at Borough. Scoey, you were no Messi as a player, but you did play up front, and you did play up front on some bad teams. What do you make of this? What does he actually mean? I mean,
well, I presume he means that his team probably pass, but don't pass forward. And I'm sure his manager, if he reads those quotes, won't be overly enamoured with him. So,
you like this guy, right, Negredo?
I thought he did okay at Man City. I think wherever he's done, he's at Valencia as well. I thought he was okay. I think he's strong, physical, technically good. I think in a different team, he would be would suit him better than Middlesbrough.
Scored a ton of goals at City as well, as I recall, but nobody seems to remember that. Liverpool roll to a 2-0 win over Sunderland, but as we record this, we're all worried about Philippe Coutinho's injury. Julian, you told us earlier how much you adore Alexis Sanchez. What do you make of Coutinho? How much worse would Liverpool be without him?
I adore Coutinho as well, and I think it's a huge loss, obviously. There's no surprise there. He's been their best player, one of the best players with that front three. I think they've got depth though. Origi showed when he came on and scored that first goal that he can play a part in there. I think Sturridge and Lallana surely are on their way back from full fitness. They'll probably be ready for the next game in the league, at least next weekend. So for that, I think they're covered. It won't be the same without Coutinho, but they'll be okay.
Also, because all those guys do different things from Coutinho.
True.
You'd
but
have to
he's got other options.
Combine them into one player. Maybe like, you know, in The Fly when you got one guy and the other guy.
That would work. That would work.
Lallana and Sturridge in one. So somebody named Josh Sims plays well for Southampton in their 1-0 victory over Everton. And Ronald Koeman, who of course managed Southampton last season, gets lambasted for apparently not being too aware of him. Hughie, the kid is 19. Are we in the media being a bit hard on Koeman?
I don't think so. I think Koeman himself was a bit churlish. Admittedly, lost a game at his old club, so wouldn't have been happy. But there's sort of a convention in sport, really, where a young kid does well, you say nice things about him, even if he's an opponent, particularly if he used to work for you, which he did. So I'm sure Koeman would have been aware of everyone at the Southampton from the age of 12. Yeah, he's 19. He's clearly on the edge of the first team. He must have known who he is. You're telling me he only knows 20 players when he's manager for 2 years. I just thought he could have, you know, said, I don't know much about him, but uttered a nice platitude rather than saying, that's not my problem, and kind of flouncing off.
Yeah, it was really bad, wasn't
it? Yeah, he's often very, very rude.
I wish Alison Rudd would be here to defend Ronald Koeman.
To defend him
from your wanton attacks. Crystal Palace somehow contrived to give Swansea two goals in a 5-4 thriller stroke horror show, which also coincides with Bob Bradley's first win. Scully, were there any positives at all in this game? And do you understand why Alan Pardew is still there?
Well, if you're Swansea, it's a positive because you pick 3 points from Crystal Palace. It is a horror show, isn't it? And I think the reason he's still there is because his side isn't in the bottom three. And although they've been on this horrific run in 2016, they've yet to be in the bottom three. But their next two games are Southampton at home, Hull away. And I think they are two massive games for Alan Pardew.
I want to ask a point on the back of this. It's a technical football point. I watched Match of the Day and they were dissecting this. And Phil Neville says of Christian Benteke, he says he's the best header of the ball in Europe. And then he criticizes him for his defensive heading because he's the wrong side of whoever it was, Leroy Fer or Fernando Llorente or some other dude. But how different is your aerial prowess at heading the ball on the attacking end versus marking defensively on set pieces?
Good question.
I assume you did both.
Yeah, I did.
Are they different skill sets?
Yes, they are. Not as different as what I think you're coming from, as what Phil Neville's coming from. They are different. I think defensively it's mainly about concentration. It's not always about the technique. It's about concentration. It's about picking your man up and basically just getting any part of your body on the ball to clear it. Where in front of goal, it's all about the technique. It's all about, you know, position, the way I'm going to attack the ball, how I'm going to attack the ball, body shape. You know, you get taught to have your chin tucked in, so you head it down. So they are totally different. I wouldn't say totally different, but they are different.
Also, you're attacking the ball when you're attacking, and whereas you're going backwards when you're defending, which is a completely different.
Are you?
Yeah, if you're on the edge of the box defending, you're going to go towards your goal.
Right, so if I'm at the far post and someone puts an arm marking it and someone puts the ball in near post at defending corner, we're not going to go and tackle the ball?
Yeah, but Benteke is not on the post. If Benteke is on the edge of the box marking you and you're attacking, Benteke is going to run towards his goal to clear the ball.
But he's still attacking the ball.
Yeah, but running towards his goal, which is a different dynamic.
Running towards the opposition goal.
Yeah. So if the corner is reversed, Benteke is trying to score in your goal, he's attacking towards your goal, running towards your goal.
Yeah.
So for example, it's easier for him.
Both examples, he's running towards a goal.
Yeah, but towards your goal or the opposition goal is different.
Yeah, but he's still running towards a goal.
Well,
that's not the point. If you're defending, it's harder. You can't then head the ball
harder
in your goal.
It's an easier skill to head the ball defending because you just got to get any part of your body on it.
If you're marking someone, you have to look at the ball and you are your player.
Marker.
When you're attacking,
that's what I said. My point is, it's a concentration thing.
Yeah, but when you're attacking, you only look at the ball. You don't look at your defender.
It's not just a concentration thing. It's about being able to keep up.
You would attack the space where the defender isn't, and you're moving.
Yeah, but you watch the ball coming. If you're defending, you have to watch your player and the ball. Your player and the ball.
The best person at attacking the ball and his movement, and I would show any young centre forward a video, is Cavani at PSG.
Yeah.
So he's not just attacking the ball. He is. Hey, where's my defender? How am I going to lose him?
Gab, one for you. The Clásico is next week, although here in England we won't be able to see it at all. We hear that Real and Barca both had rough weekends. What happened?
No, this business with the kickoff times, obviously it's to do with the blackout rule. We're talking about this since we're blue in the face. People are very adamant about this and they get very touchy. So I'll just move on from there. But yes, they had tough weekends. Real Madrid were frankly really terrible against Sporting Gijón. They took the lead, but really nothing worked in the 4-4-2. Zinedine Zidane had this great quote. And he said, what did I like today? He says, like, absolutely nothing except for the result. Barcelona were even worse. In fact, they should have lost at Real Sociedad. They drew 1-1. Serious defensive problems. Real Sociedad did push them up. They pressed them up the pitch. I think Barcelona had less than 50% possession for what feels like the first time in yonks. So I think they'll both be fine, but they are clearly thinking ahead to next Saturday. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many, many thanks to my guests today, Julian Lawrence, James Scowcroft, and Matt Hughes. And also thank you to Matthew Syed. Remember, it's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Now, you can also press that subscribe button on wherever you choose to download your podcast and leave a review on iTunes if you're listening on an Apple device. We're going to be back next week.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.